Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, May 19th. Today, little attention is given to Indigenous people who go missing or murdered, both in Colorado and across the country. But state lawmakers hope to change that. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance provides workers' comp insurance and was recently named one of the most community-minded companies in Colorado for the third year in a row. Last year, Pinnacle donated $1.5 million in grants, donations, and scholarships to communities across the state. Learn more about how Pinnacle puts care to work at pinnacle.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1864, residents of Denver awoke in the wee hours to a roaring, fearsome sound, described by one newspaper as the water engine of death dragging its destroying train of maddened waves. Built at the confluence of the South Platte River and Cherry Creek, Denver endured a century of flooding, with a dozen major deluges between 1864 and 1965. The first, which struck a town less than 6 years old, set the standard for destruction. At least 8 people died as the water swept away Denver's City Hall and jail, and the Rocky Mountain News Building, among many other structures that stood precariously close to the creek bed. Members of the 1st Colorado Volunteers rescued and sheltered countless people affected by the crisis, but still, recovery came slowly. Now, a quick message from our sponsors, the Colorado Education Association. The Colorado Education Association is made up of more than 39,000 educators across Colorado, all working together in a strong union to make sure students get the exceptional public schools they deserve. Learn more about CEA by visiting coloradoea.org. Next, our feature story. Little attention is given to Indigenous people who go missing or murdered, both in Colorado and across the country. State lawmakers hope to change that after introducing a bill that is expected to be signed by Governor Jared Polis. It will create a new Office of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives within the Colorado Department of Public Safety at a time when Colorado has more than 50 cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people, according to a task force that helped create the legislation. Equity reporter Tatiana Flowers talks to Erica Brunlin about the state's new emphasis on trying to locate Indigenous people who remain missing.
Hi, Tatiana. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the basics. Senate Bill 150 creates a new Office of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives within the Colorado Department of Public Safety at a time Denver is among the cities with the highest number of cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls that are not included in law enforcement records. Walk us through exactly how this state office will operate.
So as you said, the office will be part of the Department of Public Safety, and it will serve as a liaison between the department and the Indigenous community. They'll be investigating the cases of missing and murdered Native people. There will also be a board of tribal representatives, law enforcement officers, and human services workers included in the effort. The bill is not super specific yet, but so far it looks like it will require some data collection about missing and murdered Indigenous people because data collection is sparse right now and collected in different ways by the different agencies who are collecting it. And so that has presented a problem and I think was a major impetus for the bill. And it will also have a public website. There will be a public website as a part of this bill that broadcasts these numbers when they're collected, and there will also be an annual report, so there's some public accountability.
And as you just hit on, the data around these cases of missing and murdered Native people is often sparse or very scattered. What other kinds of flaws or shortcomings exist in law enforcement agencies and investigation bureaus throughout the state that have contributed to the cases of Native people who are missing or murdered not being prioritized?
So one organization may have one number for how many people are missing and murdered who are Indigenous in Colorado, while another organization has another number, which advocates said isn't helpful in trying to determine the scope of this. The Colorado Bureau of Investigation sometimes lists people who are Latino as white and vice versa. And the creators of the bill have said missing Native people have been listed as Latino or white or black, which skews the numbers. There's not always a whole lot of information about people who go missing, especially if they're transient, which I know from prior reporting. So in some cases, their race may be identified incorrectly. And if the person does not have familial support or friends or family who are in touch with them before they are missing, you can see how that would be a problem in terms of identification.
Yeah, it sounds like a really big challenge with just a lot of inconsistent and inaccurate data and not many leads for investigators to go off with that inaccurate data.
Right. And so one thing I know from prior reporting is that the investigative agency, so like law enforcement, if there's no connection to the person, like if they are homeless, for example, and they don't have friends or family who are connected with them, it makes it really difficult for the law enforcement agency to search for them and to know really any information about them. Like in some cases, if you look at the cold case database that Colorado Bureau Investigation has, they only sometimes have one or two sentences about the person who is missing. So it doesn't make it easy for the investigating agency. It doesn't make it easy for reporters who are trying to get the word out. It doesn't really make it easy for anyone.
No, not at all. And I'm sure it doesn't make it easy for families either. No, as you report, Tatiana, this bill feeds into a broader effort across states to put more attention on cases of missing and murdered Native people. What are other states doing to shine a light on these cases?
There's 15 other states that have taken legislative action to address this issue, and that's according to the task force that created this Colorado bill. It's a loose group of Native women from across the state who felt that this was a huge issue that they really needed to try to tackle. So, for example, in nearby New Mexico, the governor there in February signed a similar law that works to improve coordination between law enforcement agencies investigating cases of missing and murdered Native women. And that creates a new position in the state attorney general's office that will focus on these cases. And it also requires similarly increased data collection and education while also providing grant funding to help improve the reporting of missing persons cases.
And now an informal group of Native women who helped create this legislation, they're known as the Colorado Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Task Force. They uncovered more than 50 cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people in Colorado. What does that say to you as an equity reporter, Tatiana, about the need for this new department?
It's an easy yet complicated question. As someone who is writing about equity issues each week, I see so much need in every sector. And it feels like these kinds of laws or initiatives need to be occurring at a much larger scale. But in this case, this office will cost about $500,000. And I suspect some of the pushback from the governor, which we will get to in a second, comes from that expense. So if there's all these equity issues everywhere, how do we adequately fund them all? I don't know. Nobody knows. I think that's a huge question in the equity space. So it's pretty remarkable, I think, and I'm sure others think, that this office will open, because for some time I and others were unsure that it would because of the governor's office's pushback. But I think all of us realize that these families deserve to have justice, like all the others out there who are struggling with some other kind of inequality issue. I did hear from a source in my reporting that in some of these cases, there doesn't appear to be much investigation that happened at all. So for example, in the story, I included one statistic that kind of touches on that. It says Denver ranks 7th in the nation among other U.S. cities with the highest number of cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls that are not included in any law enforcement records. And that's according to the Urban Indian Health Institute.
Wow, just a really sobering statistic. And one of the family members who is still waiting for justice, who you interviewed, is Willa Whiteskunk, whose brother was murdered and whose son went missing at age 21 in July 2000. Willa's story sounds like an especially heartbreaking one. Tell us more about her and her relentless search for her son.
She lives in Toyoak, that is home to the Mountain Ute tribe, and her son was home with her when she last saw him. And since then, she has had no clue about where he could be. And she told me that he was the kind of person that everybody got along with, and even though he had some struggles with alcohol, he wasn't the kind of person to disappear. And she's heard from investigators, she said, only a few times since he went missing. And in July, he will have been missing for 22 years. So in the meantime, she said she's just trying to live day by day, even though all she does is just wait and wait and wait. She said the word wait 4 times in one sentence. And I didn't include it in the story, but she did say that many of her son's friends who are of similar age on their reservation have already died. And she said her son's case is not the only missing or murdered Indigenous family member's case she's dealing with. Her brother was killed years ago, and investigators are still looking for the perpetrator.
Wow, her story just gives me chills. I can't imagine being in that position of just waiting and waiting for answers.
Agree.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk today, Tatiana, and for covering such an important statewide effort to find more Native people who have gone missing or been murdered.
Thank you, too, for your time.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado hospitals in 2020, on average, charged privately insured patients nearly three times what Medicare paid for the same services, according to a new report from researchers at RAND Corporation, a nonpartisan think tank. The report, released this week, ranked Colorado 12th in the country for the gap between Medicare and the privately insured. Nationwide, hospitals charged privately insured patients an average of 224% of what Medicare pays for the same services. About 56% of Coloradans are covered by private insurance, meaning that they are insured through their employers or buy insurance from an insurance company. Medicare, the government health insurance program providing care for older adults, covers about 11% of the state, according to the Colorado Health Institute. Colorado faces the largest increase in homes and businesses threatened by wildfire of any state, with nearly 1 million properties, which represent two-fifths of all those in the state, already facing some risk, a new analysis shows. The First Street Foundation Wildfire Risk Modeling ranked Colorado number 7 in the country for structures facing wildfire threats. The area with the greatest wildfire property risk is in the Front Range's growing suburban plains counties, including El Paso, Douglas, and Larimer counties. Over the next 30 years, the model projects that an additional 447,000 homes, businesses, schools, and other public buildings in the state will face an increased risk from wildfire, a 19% increase from today. Aurora Public Schools Board of Education voted Tuesday to close two small schools at the end of the next school year. The district will shut down Sable and Paris Elementary Schools as part of its long-term facilities plan called Blueprint APS, which three board members wanted to steer away from instead. The 4-3 vote came 2 months after the same board had voted to keep the schools. Aurora Public Schools had already closed six schools as part of its Blueprint plan and plans to invest more than $75 million in new projects, including the development of two new magnet schools on the sites of closed schools and the construction of two new buildings. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.